The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And what an afternoon it has been. We have talked about the mess in Michigan. We had Bill Battle on, the legendary sports business mogul and athletic director at Alabama. But we continue to come back to the topic du jour, and that is the CFP. Of course, they're meeting in Chicago, probably kind of going to come out of Chicago on Friday with a plan for 12. But, you know, when does it all go into effect? And what's this worth? We talk about everything but the elephant in the room, and that's the television angle. There's no secret. ESPN is the media partner in all of this. And, of course, that's why we have our next guest. He's John Orend. Nobody more plugged in or more important or influential in the world of sports media than the reporter and columnist for the Sports Business Journal. John, thank you very much. Great to take you away from watching Maryland lacrosse matches so you could come on here. Good afternoon.
I thought that's what we were going to talk about, Maryland lacrosse. I'm not ready to talk CFP, Paul.
Yeah, you know, every time someone asks me about college football and college expansion, I say, well, it can't happen. Maryland was married to the ACC, and look where they are now. It did probably cost them a few dollars, though, didn't it?
I think overall it was a good move for them, just in terms of TV money, in terms of revenue, and bringing in some big brand schools. I'm a firm supporter of that move.
Well, which brings us to the question that we're trying to unpack here, and you know we may not know the answer to all of these questions, but you cover the media world, and we saw recently what the NFL was able to get out of countless networks, and in college football there's basically one, and there's a few. I mean, certainly Fox has some important connections, but as you listen and talk to people. I am really interested in your thoughts on the media aspect of where college football seems to be headed.
It's interesting. A lot of people, and a lot of what I read, blame media and blame ESPN for this. And I think ESPN's happy for an expansion. I think they want to see an expansion. But I certainly don't see ESPN as the driving force of this expansion. They already had the CFP with four teams that was going well for them, plus a whole host of bowl games. One area where that I'm going to be looking at, and I don't know what it is yet, I'm being spun by the networks who are saying, look, if this is a money grab, it's an awful money grab because all the money is based on, the major part of the money of the NCAA tournament is based off the Final Four and the championship game. The Final Four and the championship game, those are already bought and paid for. Those already exist. What they're going to end up doing is adding in a bunch of earlier round games, which aren't going to be worth nearly as much as people think they are. That's what the networks are going to come at this saying. I think, of course, what you see on the other side is we're building an NCAA tournament for football, and you see how popular March Madness is. So that's where as they report this going forward, that's going to be the real sort of touch point, the real focal point between the networks and the colleges that are trying to sell it.
And John, as you said that, I started thinking, and I don't want to argue against my employers, but we do try to be truthful here. But the first round games of this, which are really the big addition on campus, can you imagine? Some of these a Big Ten school or in Michigan or Ohio State or Wisconsin hosting a Southern school on a Saturday, the Saturday before Christmas. But that is not exactly prime time in the television world, is it? Because that's such a busy time of the year.
Yeah, that's a busy time of the year. And frankly, if you're ESPN, you already have that area. You already have that programming scheduled with bowl games. And let's be honest, the eighth seed almost never is going to win the championship, is it? Going against Alabama on a bye, give me a break, right? But I think the way that the networks are viewing this, they're happy to have it. It does scare them. I think that they look at the March Madness and they look at college basketball regular season, and there is a real fear that college football regular season, which right now matters from September through December, is going to matter a little bit less. And I think that that's something that scares them. I mean, do they want to sacrifice pretty good ratings and very good programming in October and September for what's going to be just, the college football tournament, that's going to be huge no matter what. I mean, so are they willing to sacrifice that? These are things that nobody really has a good answer to yet. And it's just sort of where the worry lines are right now.
And John, there's a lot of unknown out there. And I ask you because you broke the story. It seems like 10 years ago, but it was in December of 2019 that ESPN was ultimately going to take away the 3:30 CBS package. And it took almost a year because of COVID for the conference to finally announce that. And I believe it was Commissioner Sankey who told us that they were planning on announcing it on the Friday of the SEC basketball tournament, which turned out to be the day after the entire world shut down on March 12, 2020. So we understand, but so your scoop lived a very long time is my point. But on that question, which is another part of this equation, because that contract goes on for many more years, that's another place where ESPN is, if it wants to get that away from CBS, is going to have to cough up significant money on top of what we already have just talked about. Have you heard anything on that?
I originally thought that they were going to work out some sort of deal, because why would CBS want a conference that had already sort of turned its back? And I got blistered by calls of people in the know calling me an idiot, because why would CBS give up a sweetheart deal for the most popular college football package that there is? What would it take for ESPN to take that away from CBS? It's going to be a lot more than ESPN has to give. I don't see CBS giving up that. I see them just enjoying the ratings until they can actually replace it with, who knows what. Pac-12's coming up, Big Ten's coming up. Who knows how they can replace it? But that's going to remain on CBS for a good long while, I suspect.
And let me ask you about that, because that is the next moment in at least college sports media. And right now, if I understand correctly, ESPN and Fox are involved with the Big Ten. Of course, the Big Ten has its own network, as we all know. What's your guess on what happens there? Because that could affect the previous two conversations we've already had.
Despite my Maryland ties, I am so I would love to own stock in the Big Ten right now. The Big Ten has, outside of the SEC, has the biggest brands in college sports. It has Ohio State, it has Michigan, it has Michigan State. It has just really big brands that people want to watch across sports, but especially in football. And football is what's going to drive this. I know ESPN really, really wants to keep them. I know Fox is already in bed with them. Fox has a big noon has a noon kickoff window set up that they set up solely for the Big Ten. It's because that's when the Big Ten kicks off. They want to populate that. Those two networks are going to do whatever it takes to keep the Big Ten in the fold. I can see CBS trying to get in there because they're losing the SEC, so they have money burning a hole in their pocket to try to get it. They love having the Saturday afternoon college window. NBC is always sniffing around. And I always explain this, Paul, this is like when you buy a house. If you have more than one bid, it's going over the asking price. You have four interested parties with the Big Ten right now, and I see that as really just taking off.
John, before you go, I would like to talk about just sports rights overall, because so much continues to change. And I keep reading you and your colleagues talk about there's nothing more valuable than live sports. Can you talk about where we are right now and what does this look like as we look ahead down the road? Where is it all going?
Well, let me put a caveat there. There's nothing more important to media companies than live sports rights for big live sports and for big brands. So something like the SEC that's going to draw a lot of viewers And because it draws a lot of viewers, it's going to draw a lot of advertisers paying a lot of money to get in front of those viewers. They're going to be fine. The Big Ten's going to be fine. I think that, you know, what I'm trying to look at right now is where that line is to where, because, you know, the NFL came out and they just did, they just got a huge increase, $110 billion, you know, over 11 years. That took money out of the market. And so I'm trying to figure out what's going to be hurt by that. The NHL wasn't hurt by that. They saw a big increase. I thought that could be there. MLB wasn't hurt by that. But Turner and Fox paid a significant increase for that programming. I will identify that the sports that I'm concerned for are the Pac-12 rights are coming up. Talk about big brands. Those are sort of big brands that don't resonate with young kids because they haven't been very good recently. That's an area of concern. The Big 12 rights, when those come up, you have Texas, you have Oklahoma. Outside of that, you don't have big brands. I think that could be an area of concern. Major League, on the pro side, Major League Soccer is, you know, they have games that bring in very poor ratings. That could be an area of concern. I just did a story on IndyCar. You know, it tried to leave NBC and it found no takers at CBS, Fox, or ESPN. Motorsports could be an area of concern. So I don't know where that line is. That's one of the big stories that I'm following. But there is a line there, and if for the sports conferences and leagues that fall below that line, it's going to be painful.
And John, on that front, the streaming part of that, you know, we're seeing it everywhere, and it's part of every story you do, whether you're interviewing the Disney people or you know NBC or up and down the dial, you know, you hear that discussed. But what does the evidence show? I mean, in terms of consumption right now.
Look, there is an unmistakable trend towards streaming, so I don't have my head in the sand about that. Amazon is starting to make some moves on streaming. They did an exclusive deal with the NFL and have a couple other deals out there. But right now, those big tech companies aren't really digging in their pockets yet for anything. I think where you're seeing streaming happening is with established media companies like ESPN, which launched ESPN Plus, or NBC, which launched Peacock. And they're trying to buy up the rights to seed those streaming platforms. But what the takeaway that I take is that NFL deal, in 2032, you're going to still be able to watch the NFL on linear television. The NHL deal, it mandates that the Stanley Cup Finals and all of the playoffs are going to be on linear television through 2028. The MLB deal, same thing. So all these big leagues, you know, they're all dabbling with streaming, and certainly streaming is a huge trend that's not going away. But all of these big leagues still prioritize traditional linear television because traditional linear television is the one area that brings in the most fans, and that they want to get their sports in front of the most fans.
What a fantastic conversation with John Orand of the Sports Business Journal. John, many thanks. Always great to converse. Hope to see you very soon.
Paul, I could talk about this stuff for hours. I really appreciate having you on, man.
No, we're delighted. It's always a treat to have you with us. John Orand joining us. We'll take a break. We will get to your phone calls at 855-242-7285 right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are back here, and we've had quite an interesting run of guests with Bill Battle and John. Let's get back to the calls. And Augie is in New Orleans. Hello, Augie.
Hey, Paul. The bumper music, Blue Oyster Cult. Don't Fear the Reaper.
Can you get better any better than that?
No, but you know, when I first heard that, you know what I thought they were saying? Don't Fear the Reaper. I thought it was about smoking marijuana.
When I first heard that music, I was convinced they were saying that, and I put my reefer down when I heard that.
At least I'm not the only one. And oh, by the way, Paul, you know, you used to have a lot of advertisers like Tack Light, Tack Shaver,
right,
Tack Visor, all these Tack things. Yesterday, for the first time, I noticed on the replay, you had a Mercedes commercial for
really?
The Mercedes SUV. And guess what I did yesterday?
You bought one?
I bought one. German engineering.
Wow, Mercedes. I've always wanted to own a Mercedes. I was hoping one day I could make the big plunge, but so far hey, by the way, if you're ever in Alabama or Nashville, you know, I could send you to a friend of mine who owns a Mercedes dealership.
That's funny, because I was thinking about that, and I thought maybe we get an autograph, but I would want him to say "Go Tigers" on.
Can you imagine walking? Can you imagine walking into the Mercedes dealership in Alabama, and all of a sudden Saban walks out and says, you know, "What would you like? What would you like, sir?"
That would be amazing. I would be in awe. Of course, he's the GOAT. He's the greatest. And I would still hearken back to his LSU days and cry over the fact that it's an unrequited love. He left us hanging at the altar. But
So what kind of car did you get?
It's a GLC 300. It's the SUV.
That's pretty expensive there, Augie.
My wife hauls stuff around.
Yeah, come on.
No, it's not, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
If you look at cars today and the sticker price and you compare them to Mercedes is not really that much more than, let's say, a Suburban or one of those Toyota Land Cruisers.
I will tell you, when I was in my mid-20s, the car I always wanted, I thought it was the coolest car in the world, was a BMW. And I once went for a test drive in a BMW, and I said, there's no way I'm ever buying one of these cars.
I always wanted a Mazda 280ZX. That's what
So anyway, I still own my 1979 blue Ford Maverick, my first car.
Well, guess what? When I had no car in high school, I had no car in college, and if it wasn't for my fraternity brothers, I would have been walking everywhere.
Hey, but, Paul, by the way, what you just said, my mother gave me a car. That car for college graduation, and I had to drive from Memphis to Shreveport, Louisiana. And with my first car, I barely made it, Augie.
Well, you have better luck than me. I would have had to look you up as a friend, because I couldn't criticize anybody's car, no matter how bad it was, because guess what? They would turn around and say, well, what about your car? And I had no car.
So Augie, I will tell you this, and I'm telling too much information, but there was an advantage to not having a car in college.
That's right. It was a big advantage.
And I'll leave it right there.
Especially when we took road trips down to the quarter, because there are nights I have no idea when I was able to make it, how I was able to make it back. But, Paul, the whole Bo Schembechler thing, I know you said you weren't necessarily surprised, but this doesn't surprise you in the least?
Well, I knew who he was, and I covered some of his games, but, you know, I you know, there was no way that you're ever sitting around going, oh, yeah, I'm sure that happened there. Just like, you know, with Penn State, until those allegations came out. I mean, I was not close to those programs. Now, I dare say all of us who covered sports at some point heard something. I mean, that's just it's not surprising. I mean, I'll bite my tongue here because I don't want to go too far. But, you know, we've all heard things. But, you know, how do you know is my question.
Well, that's true. But I've got to say, you really lambasted John U. Bacon. And I know he wrote a book that I actually have, something about Bo's life lessons or something like that. I mean,
let me, Augie, we invited John on, and I'm not being, I think John's fabulous, but, you know, he basically told us that, you know, he needed some more time to think about his thoughts. And I'm like going, what do you need? I mean, you're the leading spokesperson for the University of Michigan. This story is now into its second week. When are you going to speak out? When are you going to say something? You know all these people. You interviewed all these people. Bacon was on this program essentially telling us a couple of years ago that he was the intermediary between some people at Michigan, whether it was Don Canham or somebody else, but between them and Jim Harbaugh.
Well, I think it's clear that you're very disappointed in the fact that there's radio silence on his end.
Well, let me put it this way: if these allegations came out about Paul Bryan or Nick Saban, I have a feeling I'd probably, whether I really wanted to or not, be called upon by someone to speak on that subject within 9 days. Don't you think?
I would think 9 seconds. I mean, they would have you on the griddle because of association with the university and those people. No, I don't blame you at all. I applaud your trying to get a comment from Bacon. But, you know, when the stuff came out about LSU, I know a lot of people came out and were very critical. Now, I'm still waiting to see what Scott Woodward does with this. It seems like his tactic is, well, let's just let time cure all wounds and we'll just leave things alone. But I've not heard anything on that end. But I don't know what's going on in the state of Michigan and around Ann Arbor, but if there's not outrage, akin at least to what happened at LSU, then something's definitely wrong in Denmark.
By the way, Augie, I was looking at some journalism society the other day who gave out their national awards, and guess who won first place in investigative reporting? It's the team from USA Today.
Oh, wow. Well, I know Andrea did a great job for The Advocate.
She has been.
So still applaud her. But still waiting on action from your man, Scott Woodward. So we'll see what happens. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. Let's continue with more phone calls. And David is up next in Florida. Hey, David, thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Coach Feinbaum.
How are you doing, David?
Always a pleasure and a privilege. As you probably remember, sports writers tend to call everybody coach.
It's the best part about that, David, as you well remember, is you just called everybody in the athletic department coach. You never had to learn a name.
Yes, there was that part of it, too. I must say, I could not detect your cheek moving at all, Paul, from inside pressure of your tongue when you suggested the Feinbaum Show should be responsible for this quote-unquote normal person.
Yes.
being part of the CFT committee.
Absolutely.
The possibilities are many and interesting, and, you know, and range from the, being an asset or at least not a detraction to the committee to, you know, having someone call the police on them within 35 seconds or so to remove them from the room. But I see a marketing opportunity here for the committee. And we're all familiar with Dr. Pepper's clever commercials involving, you know, normal people, young people. Maybe Dr. Pepper could sponsor some sort of a contest to pick that fan, assuming they say thanks but no thanks to your offer.
No, I agree. And who was the guy that Dr. Pepper used to be the head of college, the college football there? They got rid of him a couple of years ago. We did a show. Larry Culpepper. That did not work. And I'm not sure this one it will either. David, thank you. Always good to hear from you. We're heading to a break. We have a lot more to do. Joe Goodman in the final hour. We just got had quite a conversation with John Orand and Bill Battle, Dan Murphy earlier on the Schembechler allegations. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We're back here on a Wednesday afternoon. Mitch is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Okay, Mitch. What's up?
First off, I'd like to say how wonderful, Miss Emily, your screener. She is a wonderful person.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I believe this is Emily. It pains me to say this, but I believe this is her last day. And we have worked with many.
We're gonna miss her.
We have worked with many people over the years, and I will say I think she is at the top of the list in terms of what she has brought to the program. We're talking about Emily Heibel, who works in Connecticut. And when you call in the program, you talk to her. We are pained that she's leaving, but she's moving on to a better position. Well, theoretically, a better position than being on the Feinbaum Show. But in her world, it is a better position.
I'm going to ask you to please allow me to vent.
Sure.
And you can tell me to shut up. You can tell me to stop. That's enough. I won't disrespect that. First off, I want to thank you. You allow your show to be a platform for all different shapes, colors, the gamut of what the world is about. And you have proven that you don't accept idle answers. When you think that people should at least have some type of opinion. And you know, of course, I'm talking about Dan from Michigan and the Bo Schembechler situation. I know your callers are probably tired of hearing me talk about the fact that I understand victims. Yes, I understand victims because I was one. From the time I was 6 years old to the time I was 9. And everything I say on your show can be either documented through court documents, DSS documents, which is Department of Social Service. Everything I say is I don't make up things. And it took me a long time to be able to talk about it. But from the time I was 6 to the time I was 9, I went through the abuse you see on Crime Channel shows. And I understand the lack of trust when it comes to wanting to ask for help. I asked for help in the second grade. Now, I don't know that my second grade teacher, and I'm not going to call her name. She's dead, I'm sure. She used to wear those cat glasses back then. She called the foster home and told them that I was crying. And so I got home and got beat so bad they had to take me to the emergency room. So do you think I ever asked for help again?
No.
You know, people think it's just easy to say, well, it happened, please help me. Especially back in the 70s and 80s, people didn't want to hear it. the perpetrator was given the benefit of the doubt, not the victim. And to say, well, so-and-so is dead, so he has nothing to answer to. Well, I hope he died with a heavy conscience, if it's true. But I'll say this because people said they can't relate. Paul, I don't know what your most dramatic emotional thing that you've been through. Maybe your mother's death or something like that?
No, it would have been losing my dad at 15. That's pretty easy for me to remember.
Okay, what if every time you had an emotional feeling about that, someone said, get over it, he's dead, he's
sure.
gone.
No, you're right, you're right.
Well, that's what they tell us. Get over it. It's done, it's over, the person's dead, they're gone. You know, how would a parent get over if they lost all their children in a car crash? Would you tell them to get over it? They're just as a victim of emotional, physical, or sexual abuse are just as emotionally and mentally scarred for the rest of their life. I'm scarred for the rest of my life. Now, I have been able to get past it. I have a family that has adopted me in my church. I have wonderful, that's why I reach out to you and your show and reach out to people. But at the same time, I have my moments when it still hurts. And why would a son accuse his father of not backing him up? Now, I don't know if Mr. Coach Shinbaker, I shouldn't even call him Coach, but I don't even know if his son really did or didn't. But I'm going to give his son the benefit of the doubt, and I'm not going to give the coach the benefit of the doubt. You know, that's where we need to be at nowadays. And I'm sorry, I won't vent like this again. I won't use your show as a platform. But I just had to say that because that damn person, when he said, well, it's sports and people are burned out over it, guess what? This is only the tip of the iceberg, probably. It's just now when people are finally getting comfortable bringing it out.
So appreciative of your...
It's probably going to be a permanent part of sports.
Mitch, thank you so much. You be well, and thanks for sharing that with us. Chris is up next in Raleigh. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. That's a difficult call to follow, but I appreciate deeply the comments that Mitch made. And thank you for listening to him and his heart. The SEC, pivoting just a little bit, the SEC seems to be the big winner in this possible 12-team format. What's your thoughts on the ACC? It looks like they might be the big loser.
I certainly don't think you could say, Chris, the ACC is coming out of this great because, you know, if you throw out last year, which you have to, because Notre Dame was a one-off, then how often are you going to have the ACC with two teams in contention? I mean, if Florida State ever got its act together, maybe we would see them again. North Carolina, maybe will be close this year, but I don't see tremendous, Miami sometimes, but I don't see great residual to the ACC.
Yeah, I see it maybe one top 10 team, and then I'm in the ACC over here, Raleigh, tend to, be 12, 13, 14, the next ranked team. So, yeah. Hey, you seem to be getting pretty certain that Georgia's going to handle things first game of the season. I'm still ready to make a bet on that.
Well, I have a long way to go. Chris, I can carry this on for another 6 weeks. So I'm like the weather. I change every day.
We got 80 days about.
Okay.
till kickoff. So
I will give you an answer closer to the kickoff. Hey, thanks. We have to run up against a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back. Douglas is up next in Clemson, South Carolina. Hello, Douglas.
Hey, Mr. Paul Feinbaum. How are you, sir? It's been a while since I've been able to call in to you. I hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Great to hear from you.
Yes, sir. I was just scrolling through, and I just read the article popped up on my phone through a news break. It says Paul Feinbaum's predicting Clemson not to make it in the CFP this year. Is that one of your quotes there today, or is that what they're picking up?
Yeah, let me explain that. By the way, rarely do we have three straight Clemson callers on this show, but I was on Get Up this morning with Heather Dinich and Mike Greenberg, and here was the question. Greenberg asked a question of the big three, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, which one do you think is least likely to make the CFP? So you have to choose one, I'm prohibited contractually from ever picking against Alabama. So I chose Clemson, and the only reason I did because of the Georgia game. I was trying to make a point that I thought Georgia had a good chance. But so I mean, if you were asking me, give me your four today. I know this sounds contradictory. I would put Clemson in there, but that wasn't the question I was answering.
I understand. Okay, that makes sense to me. So I thought I would call and get.
You know these Clemson websites. They got to beat up on poor Paul Feinbaum.
Oh no. I know you represent the SEC, and I got nothing against that. I mean, look here. I appreciate Alabama every day because. If it wasn't for Alabama, we wouldn't have had Frank Howard, Danny Ford, and Dabo Swinney.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, come on, hey, look here, I'm a Clemson grad. My five generations of our family's Clemson grad. My granddad played football in 1924 to 1928.
That's amazing.
I know you're a Tennessee grad, and look here, we love Alabama too, but we, you know, they got 18, 19 titles. We got three. Look here, we want to keep going. Thank God for Dabo Swinney and how he runs the program. But what I'm saying is I appreciate you know what you do and how you commentate and you tell it like it is and you tell it like how you feel. And you don't care what anybody else thinks. And I that's the way I am. And I appreciate your direction on that. But like I say, I disagree with you on a lot of stuff you talk about the ACC and the SEC. But, you know, it is what it is. But you know a lot more than I do because that's what your job is. But bottom line is, I know a lot about Clemson and the history of it, and the football and the program. And
Douglas, let me say something here because you mentioned a couple of people, and I mean I really am a big fan of Dabo Swinney. I know sometimes we spar, but I've known Danny Ford for 40 years, and I think he's one of the coolest people I've ever met. And I've told this story years ago, but. Many years ago, I was asked to speak at an event in Gadsden, Alabama, honoring Danny Ford, which is where he's from. And I found myself, before the event, it was a roast where people get up and take shots at the host. And there was a small dinner in the back room of the Gadsden Country Club, and Danny was in there and some local people. And I happened to sit next to Frank Howard. And I will tell you, I was in my early late 20s, early 30s at the time, and I had never heard such language, and I haven't heard such language since. I've never been more entertained by a man in my life.
Coach Howard was a knucklehead, man. He, after he retired, and you know, he hung out at the around the the college and the football program he was tied in, and he was always there. You would see him around campus, Coach Howard. But I was there when Coach Ford was there. Was our
Douglas, I hate to do this. We're up against the clock, but we'll continue this. But, yeah, but Frank Howard, there ought to be a 30 for 30 on just the way he talked. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.